friends, welcome to episode 253 of Storyteller Conclave. This is a show all about helping you run the best tabletop role-playing game that you can, whether you're a new storyteller or dungeon master learning the craft, or an experienced storyteller looking to take your game to the next level. I'm Sarah.
I'm Rob.
How are you doing, Rob?
Well, considering I forgot one component as I was literally getting things set up late, that I usually have like a way to control some things, and I went, uh-oh. I don't have that with me.
You don't have your wireless mouse sitting in front of you so you can...
Yeah, I was like, I gotta go get that over there, and it's over there.
Frell it, we'll do it live.
kind of. But it makes it uncomfortable, so...
Yeah, I get you.
But other than that, I do want to say one thing before we get too far into this, and that is that I want to apologize to our Patreons. We've both been exceptionally busy, and I've been unbelievably busy, and I haven't gotten things posted, because I was trying to do a regular post in January and February of, like, hey, let me get something out there and kind of keep up some communication. I should probably turn that off, too. And I just totally screwed it. Like, I'm going to say I didn't have any bandwidth left.
Well, it's not like you haven't been,
No, but our listeners, don't know all the intricacies of what's going on in our existences right now. And my bandwidth is low because I'm, like, doing... I'm right now in the middle of a certification program that is way deeper.
60% of your energy is going to work, and the other 60% of your energy is going to this certification class.
Yeah,
so.
it's pretty intense right now. It's as I like to put it, it's four midgets in a small tent. It's pretty, it's tiny intense. So not enough that anybody needs an over. It's tiny intense because I don't want to say it's little people, But the fact of the matter is that it's. It's enough that it's overwhelming, and like the moment that I think that I have to do something more, I'm like, oh god, I don't have the bandwidth, and I lose it, and then a week later, I'm like, did I not do that thing? Oh no, and I feel terrible about it every time. So I apologize. That being said, it's just been odd weather here.
Yeah,
not
a little
bad.
Bit. We've had a nice stride where it's like 70 degrees in spring already.
Yeah. Yeah, we have moved into some wacky land space between spring and summer.
Yeah, I mean, climate change is a double-edged sword. On one hand, polar ice caps melting and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we get 70 degrees in February and March. So
yeah, which is weird enough as it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to sneeze, so please go.
All right, well... So tonight we are talking a little bit, so our second Wednesday of the month, we are doing a system spotlight tonight. We are talking about a game system that Rob is actually going to be running in short order, and that is Tiny Taverns.
Which is part of the Tiny D6 family.
Yeah, very much like Powered by the Apocalypse is an overbroad, sort of game system that gets adapted to a lot of different specific settings. Tiny Taverns uses the Tiny D6 system as its platform to do what it does.
Yeah, it's been around, as far as I could tell, from like 2013, originally done by Brandon McFadden of Smoking Salamander, which you can find the OGL rules out there still for Tiny Dungeon, which was actually, I think it was called Small Dungeon originally. And then Gallant Knight picked it up, I want to say, in 2015, or 2016, and in 2017, they basically started their efforts to turn out a second edition, which kicked off in 2018 as a Kickstarter and went well. And pretty much from that point forward, they started producing other themed properties around it, and Tiny Taverns was one of those. So like, you had Beach Patrol, which is your basically like slow-mo running lifeguards.
Oh my god.
Which is kind of funny. Mecha and Monsters, which is like a take on like giant robot jocks, fighting monsters in
robot
cities.
Robot jocks, Pacific Rim sort of thing.
Yeah. Tiny Cthulhu, Tiny Frontiers, which is their space one. Tiny Gods is actually a supplement where it's basically just how to play Tiny Gods in the universe and how their system works. Tiny Gunslingers, which is the Western one, and they actually have a blackjack-inspired shootout mechanic for that one.
Oh, wow, they actually made their whole new system with blackjack and hookers, huh?
Yes, they did. Honestly. Tiny Pirates, of course. Okay. Tiny Living Dead. Tiny Supers, which has gotten a lot of accolades. Yeah. A lot of people seem to like Tiny Supers.
Okay.
And Tiny Wasteland, which is their post-apocalyptic game, which has, settlements and vehicles, mutations, But the thing is, it's tiny D6. Like, old D20, where, like, everything was compatible. Or Palladium, where everything was compatible.
Yeah,
like, if
yeah.
you wanted to play Ninjas and Super Spies in Rifts, you could.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there were, it was part of the core system.
Got it. When I was running Palladium hardcore, that was actually, like, I would come in with the stack of books.
Yeah.
Like, I had Heroes Unlimited,
yep.
Ninjas and Super Spies,
yep.
TMNT.
Another Strangeness.
I want to say that was the core three, but I also had a bunch of the supplements for TMNT as well, so.
Yeah, wasn't there Turtles in Space?
There was Turtles in Space, Transdimensional
Turtles,
or as
yeah.
I call them, Dimensional Turtles.
Yeah.
You've got, and then of course the Mutants Down Under, Mutants
yep.
of the Yucatan, Mutants of Avalon, Mutants of,
yeah. Yeah, and that kind of followed the same kind of thing with, like, Rifts and all of its books, Robotech and all its books.
Yep.
It was a very common theme for core systems to have these, like, additional rule sets that stacked on top of their core sets.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiny Taverns kind of fits that, but also sits in a, like, different space. So, like, Tiny D6 is a very simple core mechanic set. But each one of the books add supplemental rules and style. They change the entire theme, in fact, of how the game is meant to be played.
Yeah, I kind of liken it, like I said, a little bit to like how Powered by the Apocalypse is kind of proliferated.
Where yeah.
If you understand the core rules of Powered by the Apocalypse, you know, 2d6, plus or minus your attribute,
mm-hmm.
your applicable attribute, and then if it comes into 7 or 9, it's a partial success. If it's 10 plus, it's a total success.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's like core Powered by the Apocalypse, but mm-hmm. every single iteration of it is going to be different
yep.
and going to have different mechanics and,
mm-hmm.
and whatnot to make it its own unique system.
Yeah, and Tiny Taverns focuses on, like, literally the heartwarming slice of life, like, TV sitcom kind of drama.
Yeah.
You know, where it's personal, like, whatever's going on is happening within the space. Like, you know, they all work at the same cafe, and that's the name of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you might get a scene at someone's house, but it's going to be one room, right?
Yeah.
Or you might
yeah.
get a scene at, like, in the alley outside of the said coffee shop,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, you think of shows like Friends, where there's, like, three sets. That's it.
Yeah.
That's effectively how Tiny Taverns kind of sets itself into those positions, because it's more about what's going, how these people are interacting with that environment and what's happening
mm-hmm.
in the environment. And what's being interjected, whether it's a relationship, whether it's an event, whether it's an outside thing that's pressing on them, and what causes the changes.
Someone in an interview I was watching while researching this game system likened it to, like, Babylon 5 or Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
And instantly it clicked for
yep.
me. I was like,
yep.
oh, okay, this is just the adventure comes to me.
Yes.
You know?
That's it.
Yeah, that's
it. That's it. You know? And so, like, and because of that, you can run Tiny Taverns very simply, and it keeps your focus very tight with your players.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the mechanics are not challenging.
The core mechanics, you're correct, are
correct.
Not challenging, yes.
The base mechanics of the game are just 2d6.
2d6, and if either of those dice comes up as a 5 or a 6,
you succeed. That's it.
You succeed, yeah.
That's good. That's your challenge.
Mm-hmm.
They added the terms of advantage and disadvantage. So
mm-hmm.
basically, you get advantage if, like, you've got a trait or a tool or the situation pushes you in the direction that, like, yeah, you probably are advantageous. Throw in an extra die. So now it's 3d6.
3d6. And if any one of those three
Correct.
Comes up a 5 or a 6.
Right. Hindrances will take a die away from the 2d6.
For disadvantage. So
right.
now you're only rolling 1d6.
Yes.
And that has come up a 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Still a 33% chance to succeed, though.
Oh, yeah,
which
totally.
Which isn't too bad.
And disadvantage always supersedes advantage. So
always.
Always
yeah.
supersedes. So if there's
yeah.
a disadvantage, it goes off. Now, there are some things to offset that, but not much.
Yeah.
Right? The one thing that you can add into this is they put in there a subline for if you want to create other challenges. So, for instance, if ones come up,
mm-hmm.
it creates, you know, problems.
Complications.
And complications. Yeah. And at that point, you and the player negotiate what the complication is let's pull this off first, because I don't want it to
dump out
everywhere.
We're negotiating the teapot right now, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's funny. I'm doing the mechanics and you're negotiating the tea. This is funny.
But this is backwards from how
it is a little backwards, but again, it's also my system.
Yeah, it's also the system you're going to be running. So
you can basically make the decision of with the player of, okay, what came out of this? Like, you were trying to do this thing or trying to avert this thing, and you rolled a one. Now, you succeeded, but what complication gets added? You know, another one is focus. Now, focus is if you've got a specific rule or an action that grants you focus, it basically extends that success rate to a 4, 5, or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you may not even have to make a test because you are already in a position that's giving you an advantage and the person is at disadvantage. And at that point,
The storyteller at that point may just waive the test altogether and just go, you know what, you don't even need to roll for this. This is fine. You succeed.
What's interesting about this is anytime the DM makes a roll to make a test, the player always gets a react. Mm-hmm. Always. So even if it's a situation where it's a roll versus roll, it's not. It's I'm doing something as the storyteller. How do you react?
Mm.
And you get to choose how you react or if you react to it or if you just choose to fail the reaction. And that is one of the core beats of this, is that you don't have to. You can choose to fail, or you can choose to react at disadvantage because you're thrown off,
mm-hmm.
which gets you some other things in that sense. We'll come around to that. But beyond that, that is the core mechanic. Everything else that Tiny Tavern throws in, which there's significance amount, because they literally break down, like, when you've got save tests, or chore tests, or notice tests, or trade tests, or charm tests, or stealth tests, like, they break it down like you're playing D20, and you need to know how specifically any action might work.
And the funny thing is, this is kind of a both it was a little bit of a frustration for me, but I understand why they did it this mm-hmm. way. And it's because, I am an experienced person who has read multiple different systems, and I know how to navigate a system when I sit down with it.
Yep.
But for people who may just be coming from, like, 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, like, they need to understand, like, I remember coming from 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons when I was reading Urban Shadows.
Yes.
And going, I've read this book 8 times, and I can't find where the initiative system is in combat. Because there isn't one. I didn't miss it. It wasn't there.
Correct.
You know? And I didn't know what to do with that, because what do you do without an initiative system, you know?
Right.
So I think unless you are someone who understands broadly how a lot of systems work and have experience with them, so that you may be coming from a narrower frame of reference, mm-hmm. and you need things like, how is stealth handled?
Yeah.
Spelled out for you.
Even if it's just a paragraph.
Right.
That says, roll 2d6.
Use the same adjudication mechanics as everything else.
Now, they do add in a few other micro mechanics for specific things for the tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, the mechanics that matter for it, like relationships, are a mechanic in this game.
Yeah.
Because they want you to understand that is a core design of how this game works,
mm-hmm.
right? So they added that in. Another thing that they kind of wanted to talk about was conflict that isn't physical.
Yeah.
Gripes and...
They call them quarrels.
Quarrels.
Yeah.
You know, which may be between players and often are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you adjudicate those? How do you work through this? Because not everyone is just going to be verbose and be able to talk their way through something at the table.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have some kind of thing. And, like... They treat it almost like an arm wrestling match, right? You have tests and see who succeeds over the other kind mm-hmm. of a thing. But again, it's not breaking away from that core mechanic by much. You might have a token that says, I won one round, and then the next round we see who wins, and whoever has 2 tokens over the other person. And all it is it's a counting mechanic.
Yeah,
that's it. That's like,
it.
Simple.
Yeah.
But it's helping anyone who's never ran a game before and the players therein play a game.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the small book that it is, it does a lot.
Yeah.
To that end.
I think to experienced role players, you're going to find the mechanics are far more verbose than they need to be.
Yeah.
But like you said, that's to the service of them.
Correct.
Because it does spell out a lot of this stuff here.
When I first looked at it, I akined it to when I brought the 3.5 book to somebody, D&D 3.5, and they were looking through it and they were just like, just tell me what I need to know.
Right.
Please don't make me read all of this.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. And realistically, you look at something like that, and it is daunting.
It is.
Right? And this game literally goes page by page. It could be like, these are all, how do you adjudicate things? Let's get to making a character kind of a thing. And it was really good. But tests are just that. Even the magic system, they make it seem like it's more than it is, but as you page through it, you're like, there's a lot of hand-waving in here.
It's an exceptional amount of hand waving. The thing that really struck me about like basically all of the mechanics in here is that
all the tests, yeah.
It's like, okay, here there's like 7 different things that you need to know for this. For this one, it's roll 2d6 and see if anything comes up a 5 or a 6. For this one, get this, you're gonna roll 2d6. And if anything comes up a 5 or yes. 6, they pass. If they have this, they get advantage. If they get this,
right.
they have disadvantage. Okay, now for this rule. All right. So this one, you're going to roll 2d6.
Yes.
It's like, okay. Okay, I get it, guys.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, yeah. You wondered if after, like, the 9th one of those, they were just going to break it down and be like, dude,
yeah.
did you read the previous 5? Right,
right.
But they did add a meta currency to the game, Fortune, which allows you to negate another player's disadvantage. Sound familiar? You know,
yeah, I thought it was cool that it had to be another player's disadvantage
when a test is going on.
So it's a helping mechanic,
right?
Not a power curve mechanic,
right? You have to explain how you're helping them with
yeah.
this, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's like, oh, I slipped something in their pocket, so when they go in to get it, they're like, oh, sweet, they gave this to me, kind
right.
of a thing,
right? Right.
You know,
right.
some or like I remembered this from the night before or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can also spend it to alter the story when a test is not going on to your benefit.
Yep.
So you might say like, you know, oh, I'm going to pass by this guard. I'm going to spend a Benny so that I don't have to stealth. I'm just literally going to distract them by like throwing something.
Throw a pebble, yeah.
You know, and that's going to work. And it's like, okay, it worked. Great. You know, kind of a thing.
Yep.
They can be acquired during a test, any test, where you choose to have a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actively are like, you know what? I'm not very good at this. Because, you know, maybe I like, my trait says this thing where I'm overconfident. So that's really going to mess me up here. So I'm going to roll with at disadvantage. Okay, make your roll. Here's your fortune.
Yeah.
But you can also obviously just be granted them based on good role player your character, or taking or doing other fallbacks and things like that.
I'm liking this trend in games that I'm seeing where it's like asking players to willingly lean into their character's deficiencies and play suboptimally, but they get a little treat for it. You know,
yeah.
You've got Mouse Guard does the same thing where if you interfere with somebody's, you know, role or something like that, you get a check for it.
Mm-hmm.
Savage Worlds encourages you to give bennies for role playing out your hindrance. Things like that.
Yep.
So I love seeing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then you can only have a maximum of 3 at any time. They carry through the active story, but at the end of the session, they wash.
Right. So again, they encourage you to spend them because you're not carrying them over. There's
no
reason to stockpile them.
You don't
them.
Start with any either. That's one thing about this game is like they're asking you to step into it. Whereas like you know other Benny games, you're just like, well, you start out with 1. No.
Right.
No. Like. The whole game is about this.
No, you have to earn them.
Earn into it.
Yeah.
You know, step into the story. Initiative in this game is defined, but it is defined kind of loosely. It's, okay, who started this mess? You get to go, your side gets to go first.
Did you initiate it? Good. Your entire side goes first, then them. Did you get ambushed? They go first.
Right. But when you take an action, there can be a reaction roll for it.
Yeah.
And that is how the game goes. It's not traditional combat because it's not combat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to this whole thing is that things are happening and people are reacting to them, and that's okay. And you can help each other. You can choose to spend your action because you technically get 2. Now, move counts as an action, you know, But, like, if you and the group are like, well, I'm going to do this and this and this, everybody's going to be like, okay, that's a lot. Like, maybe do the one thing and then I'll help you do this other thing with mine.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the idea is that just, you know, don't just run your way through because you everything can be an easy action. That's not how this game is meant to be played.
Right. This isn't a game you're going to win. You know?
Exactly.
Like, no, nobody's winning here. It's just a story.
But it is, like you said, all one side goes, then the other side goes, and then that round is complete, and you move on. And some things, there are some action sets where, like, each round you have to see where things are at.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with conflicts, depending on the type of conflict, there might be, like, oh, you need to win so many rounds.
Right, right.
You know, kind of a thing. Then it's into character creation, and like any good narrative game today, it doesn't start with the characters, it starts with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And your world is small.
Yeah.
It is the tavern, quote-unquote.
Right. Now, I love that you put that, you say, like, quote-unquote, because I think one of the great things about this is that although the game is called Tiny Taverns, it doesn't have to be a tavern.
Not in the least.
One thing I thought of is this would be an amazing system to run a Spirited Away game in.
Yeah.
Because the quote-unquote tavern is the bathhouse.
Correct.
For the spirits.
Yep.
And, I mean, that would make a phenomenal setting here.
And the best part about that is the bathhouse is a perfect example. For those of you who don't know, it is a multi-floor, like, very many floors. And each floor has different meaning, but it's not defined.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, as the story needed something like a banquet hall, there it is.
There it is, yeah.
You know, oh, we need to know where the water comes from. There's a boiler room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it fills in the necessities for what it is.
Yeah.
So if a player says, you know, oh, what do we want to do? Let's do a bathhouse for the spirits. Okay. You know what I would like to be? I would like to be the boiler man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I live down in the boiler area.
I heat the water. I maintain the pumps.
I have some relationships with some people, you know, kind of a thing, you know, and it works its way up the chain to all the various people who work in various places, all the way to, like, I manage the cleaning of the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, what do you do? Well, I manage the front gate where the spirits come in. Right. And the bridge therein, you know, that
gets
them over here. And, like, I have crews that pick and sort people to make sure spirits don't get involved with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that all of that can be built in that stack. And that's what Tiny Taverns is trying to do, is, like, come up with a general concept, then build your stack with your characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, I mean, it has a random chart if you can't figure it out.
Yeah, sure.
Which is great.
It has a lot of great resources in there for helping you explore different variations other than just, it's a tavern.
Yeah. And then it immediately steps into character creation and is just like, okay, fantasy first.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing here. This is narrative fantasy. We are not min-maxing. We are not developing, combat characters or making the perfect place, right? Have diversity. Have flaws, have reasons. So you start with a heritage, which is your cultural, environmental, and genetic kind of persona.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got some interesting standardized races.
They got your standard human, dwarf, I don't even see elf in here, actually.
No.
Elf is interestingly missing.
Yeah.
But then you've got, it branches into Firbolg.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, that's an odd one. Mandrake, which is basically your, Mandrake.
Correct.
Yeah, it's
correct.
A dragonborn, basically.
Correct.
Okay. The Panguri, which, if I remember correctly, is the catfolk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The Pixie, which is what I absolutely want to play when they are 1 foot tall with little butterfly wings.
Yep, yep.
The Pooka, the Selkie, and some sort of a mixed race or a Scion.
Where you could grab two of those races and mix them together.
Yeah.
But the idea is that all the races have a single heritage trait which makes them unique, which might be like humans have passion, which gives them some advantages to what they're good at. Dark vision, giant strength, the typical kind of things you're used to. And then you have two additional traits that you get to pick one of.
Mm-hmm.
So even two people who are playing human might have different traits.
Are you saying that all humans are different from one another?
Isn't that odd? And it's not just because of their background.
Wow.
Right.
Huh.
But the list there is pretty good, like adaptive, insightful, tough. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that are in there. What's interesting with the Scion is that when you pick the Scion, you pick your primary traits from something, and then you get to pick your secondary traits from the other,
which is
kind of nice. And you can kind of choose which heritage is your primary heritage where you grew up.
Yeah, you know?
It kind of reminds me of Grog, you know, like barbarian, grew up with halflings.
right, yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then after that, they're like, by the way, pick two additional traits, right? Mm-hmm. And so these are just unique aspects, their strengths and weaknesses. What's interesting is that they don't just give you a benefit.
Mm.
Like, if you are one of these, or if you have one of these things, it may be great. It'd be like acrobat is wonderful, or bar fighter. That doesn't necessarily mean that bar fighter is not going to get you in trouble.
Right, right. I notice there's also ones that are like ostensibly negative sounding on the surface, like paranoid is on that list. And I'm like, paranoid? Why would you want to pick paranoid? And it's like, well, because you can never be surprised.
Yeah.
It, like, entirely takes ambush mechanics off the table because you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I expected this, you know. And I like that.
Uh-huh.
It pulls me right back to 7th C and earlier games where it's like, here are your strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing that aren't strengths and weaknesses, right? They're almost story elements because now they're – because, like, acrobat is kind of a personality trait but also a physical trait.
Right, right.
Where did that come from? How did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what made you think or be that way, you know?
Worth noting, we haven't talked about magic mechanics in this yet, but this is also, I believe, where you would take your magical ability as one of
these. Yeah, how you got it, whether you're a wizard, whether it's natural, whether you just use items.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing is you buy into the magic here.
Yes.
And then you have proficiencies and masteries. So you pick pick two proficiencies that you have. And now these proficiencies are not a list.
It's just kind of anything that you think
you
you're
put a word.
Good at.
You know, what am I good at? I am good at cooking. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You're good at cooking. Well, you know, what else? I'm a master of whiskeys. To get a mastery is the next step of that is that you pick two proficiencies and then you can either pick one more proficiency or master one of your previous two that you picked.
Mm-hmm.
And realistically, mechanically, and I love this, the mechanics are very simple. If you have proficiency and you're using your proficiency in a test, you have advantage.
Yep.
If you're a master at it, you may remove disadvantage from your test.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It doesn't give you extra. It just lets you remove the disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So, which makes sense. Like, I know what I'm doing, so I'm going to remove it.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I can work around this thing.
It's like I said at my second rodeo, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The other thing is that they don't discourage you from for having martial proficiencies, like sword fighting or fencing. They're just saying, they do remind you, like, this game isn't a combat game.
Mm-hmm.
We have some level of combat mechanics in here, but realistically,
this is a slice of life drama.
The chances of you doing that are exceptionally low.
Now, you may be the bouncer, and it may happen once during the campaign that a fight breaks out, and that may come in clutch.
Correct.
But understand,
right.
You are not dungeoneering, you are not fighting monsters every week.
Right. There is, though, a trait for dungeoneering.
Sure.
Which, of course, because
of course there is.
Maybe you came from it.
Sure.
But the idea is that you're building your background effectively by doing all these things and who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The last one, or the last kind of skill piece, is what is your tavern trade? Like, put in a couple words what you do. Are you the maid of the rooms?
Mm-hmm.
Are you the maitre d'? Are you the master of tea ceremonies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you? Just someone who lives there? Like, are you the
are you Norm?
Yeah,
that just comes in every day at 2.
Right. Well, the thing is that like effectively, if you're not there, they're concerned, kind of a thing.
Yes,
but
yes.
You're in every scene because you're always there.
Right, right,
right. I liken it to the stories of the French prince who lived in Boston. He was exiled to America,
mm-hmm.
and he basically lived above one of the pubs in Boston for, like, years.
I would have thought he'd have moved to Bel Air.
I thought so, too.
The French Prince of Bel Air?
That would make sense, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But unfortunately, no. I don't think Bel Air was around.
Fair enough.
But regardless, you become a fixture.
Yeah.
Of those kinds of places. And so if you're attempting to do something that fits within your tavern trade, you have advantage.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. Again, we're not moving far from mechanics here, people.
Yeah.
They did add in something else, which I think really talks to Tiny Taverns itself, and that is belief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, belief is your character's principle, your driving principle of that. And when it comes into question, whether you're questioning it or the actions of the story put it in question, it might cause you to be unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Unwell is a psychological status.
Yeah.
And when you're unwell, you're at disadvantage. You're out of sorts. You see it in TV shows all the time where the person is, like, you know, frustrated and grumpy and they're not able to do their job right and things like that.
Entirely off their game.
Yeah. They're literally unwell. I love that as a basic mechanic.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, and the only way to resolve unwell is through gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But by becoming unwell and then exemplifying or defending your belief, you gain XP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of that, like, Seven Seas drama components.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Drawing that part into the story so that you can choose, you can move through recovery of it.
Yeah.
Within
yeah.
the story. There are some physical traits and things like that they put into play, but I'll talk about those a little bit later, but that's the main parts there. Items and belongings and weapons and armor really don't have mechanics.
Yep.
It's what makes sense.
Yeah, in fact, they go out of their way to say things like, you know, your toothbrush is not equipment. Like,
stop.
Don't
it.
Stop it.
Yeah.
It's you, not
you're
kind
in
of
a
game.
Tavern.
Yeah.
Like I go back to UHF and, like, my mop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, that's a piece of equipment,
that's a piece of equipment
that matters to you.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on your sheet. It's important. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so things like that, because it defines who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Kiki's broom in Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah.
Like, that's an important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they also threw some final questions in. You don't have to answer these, but it harkens me back to, like, the 20 questions kind of a thing to help round stuff out. Like, who is your closest friend? Why are they there? How did you end up at the tavern, either working or living there? And some details about that. And then, what puts you in a good mood? Because that's what's going to make you well again
mm-hmm.
from being unwell. And I love that. Like a rousing game of cards always makes me smile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You now know how to get well again.
Yeah.
And that becomes part of the story. And you see those tropes play out in almost every TV show.
This is it's actually kind of similar to Blades in the Dark. You've got the vices.
Yes.
I want to say
your recovery. Yeah,
a little more sinister, I think, in Blades in the Dark. Whereas this is more a little more wholesome, I think, the deep down. But
yeah, I mean, there is nothing, and I'm going to say this: there's nothing to say that you can't run a very seedy, dark Tiny Taverns game.
I suppose so. Yeah,
because nothing is setting any kind of framing on the tone.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea, it's slice of life. Whose slice of life?
Right, right.
Right? Is this Sin City?
Putting the slice back in slice of life.
Right, right. Like, are you running in, I love this concept, are you running the bar that Deadpool works at the beginning of Deadpool?
Right, right,
The school for wayward children?
Yeah.
That's a legitimate tavern you could run in Tiny Taverns, and it would be hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you guys do? We're an assassin's guild masquerading as a bar.
Right, right, right.
We have a kill board. Okay.
Bob's winning. Buy him a drink.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole thing. You know, you're gonna have problems walking the door there all the time. So then that kind of breaks into the actual mechanics that roll into the setting itself. That idea of wellness and mood, injuries, inflictions, and relationships. I'm not going to break down the relationship mechanics because they're pretty well set forth of how you move through them. And it is relatively black and white. But the interesting parts are like wellness, which is your psychology. We spoke about that. The idea is that this game is built around that slice of life about what's happening to the people who are living in that situation. You know, what affects their moods? What affects their beliefs, that wellness? How do you resolve them? How do you change as you move through this? So the wellness condition becomes a critical, almost hit point structure, as well as story motivator. You know, just as much as injuries and inflictions, and I think this is neat, is that injuries and inflictions come in two categories, minor and major. Minor can be slept off or recovered for a scene if someone just does like some first aid on you or something like that, but it'll come back next scene. But they effectively only just give you disadvantage for whatever they're affecting. And injuries don't have to just be physical. They can be something that's a little psychological just as easily. Like, something makes you sad, like, maybe someone didn't show up. It's not going to affect your belief to make you unwell, but, like, you're depressed. So when anybody asks, you know, ask or trigger that, you might choose to roll at disadvantage because you're kind of depressed about that. And that's part of what that is, but somebody might give you aid in some way, like have a conversation with you. It's not healing, but it might help the affliction for the scene.
Right, and gets
you through it.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is that you can get past it. It'll come back around until the end of the day when you have a good night's sleep and you can let it go. Right? Whereas major injuries or inflictions are something that require a story beat to actually have them fixed. You know, things that would normally, like having a broken arm, healing is going to help it, but you're going to need to do, you're going to need to go get someone to help you get that healed or set, you know, maybe something went missing and it's really bothering you, That you got to make a new one. Right? Maybe the whole group gets together and secretly makes you a new mop, you know, kind of a thing like that. Or fixes your, you know, the choice mug that, you know,
Hank
has because he's there every week and that's his mug. You know, those types of things make a difference and build to the story and in that major sense. So the idea is that both the concept of being unwell and this idea of inflictions and injuries affecting you add to story elements. They're helping draw that story together and build you all the hooks and pieces you need to keep the story going. Because whatever the carrier is of the event that's going on, you know, a food auditor is coming in, is just what's happening for the day. That's not what's affecting everyone. Those are all the other little pieces. How you come into the day, how you leave the day.
You've always got to remember at all times that this is a slice of life game, which means that the lives, the minutiae of the lives of the characters are the focus of the game. And so the health inspector coming in is not the challenge for the day. It's just the thing that's going to stir the pot. But we're still focusing on how that affects the people in the tavern.
So I think personally that the DM section is short and concise and fantastic. I love that it gets immediately to framing everything very quickly. It actually helps with connections right off the bat, like gives you, you know, good, bad, and indifferent connections and makes you think about it in one page, very simply put. Helps any storyteller right off the bat. And then it gives you how to generate a slice of life plot. Like step by step. And a lot of it is like, get out of the way. Honestly. Like, let the players tell their story. Let the hooks present themselves. Players will open their mouth, put the hook in their own mouth, and stare at you. It's gonna happen. Keep track of their problems. That's going to generate everything else right
yep.
there.
Yep.
Use relationships as plot hooks.
Oh my god, man. This seems like the absolute best game system for doing that thing that I love, mm-hmm. which is seeing you get in a conflict with an NPC in mm-hmm. game one, and then I bring him back in game 28.
Yeah, yeah.
as your rival.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. The other thing that they're very good about is keeping things grounded to the tavern.
Uh-huh.
They're not going anywhere. No one cares about what's going on over the mountain.
Right, right.
Or even outside the boundaries of the town.
Unless that's creating an ale shortage in your tavern.
Right, but that's not even that. That's the guy who comes to the door and says, here's your two barrels. We ordered 12 for the wedding. You're only getting two. There's a war in Hemet. Crap, well, we need 10 more barrels. Where are we going to get 10 more barrels of ale? I don't know. You're going to have to negotiate with Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got, you know, he stocked up last week.
Peterson.
So now you got to figure out how you're going to do that. But that's going to happen in the inn.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the key to that whole thing is that, you know, does your group go and steal from Peterson?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or do they try and haggle with Peterson or butter up Peterson, you know, or whatever?
Right, right, right.
You know, how do they handle that? That's the key is that you keep the story grounded in that area. That it's their story in that space and let them come up with it and then reward them often. Use advantage as a reward in gameplay. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, it's ostensibly the reward of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because XP is sold basically to the players, through the game, through recovering your beliefs and things like that. You gain bubbles of XP, and you mm-hmm. can spend those bubbles to do other things on your character.
Mm-hmm.
And again, nothing changes the mechanics.
Yeah.
They just give you more abilities.
Yep.
Effectively. But the idea is it's very flat. This is meant to be like a couple sessions. You can play this long.
This isn't a game you're going to be winning, you know? Yeah, this isn't like you need to build the most optimal character to sling drinks, you know?
No, no. And then they go on to give you tavern events and personal stories and things like that and frameworks to do all that. Honestly, a nice section that can be lifted and shifted to any system.
Yeah.
Like if you need some help on slice of life stuff, grab this book, go to the back, read up on it,
mm-hmm.
apply it.
Yeah.
Because it's not steeped in mechanics here in the least. Mm-hmm. The relationship section of this is not steeped in mechanics. It'll work anywhere.
The relationship, well, okay, I'm gonna disagree with you at least a little bit. It's not, okay, I'm gonna say steeped in mechanics, but it does have some mechanics to it.
It has its own, but what I'm saying is it's not like you must play Tiny D6 mechanics to be able to use this. No.
Yeah, no, it's there's definitely like it's kind of got its own little self-contained thing that you could easily pick up and drop into 100%.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And that's what I like is that this game is mechanically light. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks much heavier based upon page by page through the book. But all it's really trying to do is help those people who are hard, crunchy people get comfortable with narrative.
Right, right.
With telling a story, because they have answers to the questions that the DM might be like, I don't know, it doesn't talk about grappling. Yes, it does. There's a paragraph on grappling in there, I assure you.
Yeah. The book could be half the size that it is.
Well, I mean, again, they say you can play this game on a 3x5 card with, mm-hmm. with 3d6 at the table.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need.
You're correct.
You can't do that with a lot of other systems.
Yeah.
Like, this book is not required after you understand that it's 2d6 with either advantage or disadvantage.
Right.
That is it.
Right.
If you give me a good reason.
Sometimes a focus.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, a fortune.
Correct. Correct.
Yes.
Hand a fortune out.
That is all of the mechanics right
there.
You've
just learned Tiny D6.
Yep.
Go grab 3d6 and play with your friends.
Yeah.
that's literally it.
Yeah. It could be half the width that it is or half the thickness that it is, but it is verbose because it needs to be, because it spells out, look, you're just using those mechanics for everything. And I think it's great.
So I'm going to say this because I've been talking for the last 40 minutes plus.
Sure.
What did you like about it?
All right. So what I really liked about it is because, well, first off, slice of life, Chef kiss, my bread and butter right there. I absolutely love slice of life stories. I've talked about this a lot before on the show, and I think being a player at my table for a while now, you also know that my strength that I love to lean into is making very lifelike NPCs and making my world feel very lived in through those NPCs and through the interactions with them. And this seems like it's an entire game based around exactly that type of storytelling. I feel like I would excel at running Tiny Taverns.
I think you'd love running Tiny
I think I would
Taverns.
Love running Tiny Taverns. I like the simplicity of the rule system. You know me, I like just enough rules to adjudicate things, and then I want them to get the hell out of my way. And I thought the how like the magic and the heritages and kind of they leave it loose enough that you can build it into any kind of world building you want. But as written, it's sparks my imagination immediately.
Yeah, talking about the fact that magic pools or is in lines, but it is not just omnipresent.
I liked there was a section in the magic section where they talk about how if you're a spellcaster, if you are not inherently magical like a pixie is, okay, if you're not a creature of magic that has their own internal well of it, that when you cast a spell, you suck the magic out of the room. And that means that you can only cast one spell per scene. Unless that scene involves you traveling somewhere else that is significantly far enough away from where the last spell was cast, that the storyteller rules that, okay, there's fresh magic there for you to tap into.
Or something affects the space
to replenish that magic.
Correct. Like, one of the games that that I was following a little bit to see how it went was one where it was an event space that the players had just decided that they were basically like a banquet hall. So of the town, like, you know, they all were people who lived in the town, but they were the ones who ran the banquet hall, like the community group that ran it. So the story was always, what's going on at the banquet hall this week? And it could have been a month later or whatever. And so some of the banquets were like the wizard's banquet. And it was watching to see which wizards brought illegal things in so they could do more magic. You know, because it was a special event where everybody knows, like, you get one shot. If you screw that up, you're done.
Right, kind of
a thing. Like,
Mom's spaghetti.
You blew your wad. And then one of the other, like, and this would have been a running theme for them. So the storyteller decided to throw in that one of their events was a wedding, and they didn't realize that half of the wedding party were fey, effectively. So an upwelling of magic shows up. And they're like, oh no, there's good. That's a lot. Like, things could get very
volatile
here.
Yeah.
And because the players had set that story in motion.
Sure.
And kind of made this made for the moment to come, you know? And I thought that was a neat way to show the ebb and flow of how that world works.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's not saying what the name of the world is or how things are run or who's king or who's not. None of that is
None
in this
of that
game.
Matters.
No, it's just because, again, they're taught. This game is focusing you on your tavern.
Yeah.
That is what we're talking about here, people.
Yeah, exactly.
The people and who are in the tavern, how they got there, why they're there. That's it. That's the story.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Actually, like, overall, I really loved the magic system. Honestly, there's like, what, four schools of magic.
Yes.
One of them is, like, hedge magic, which is, like, I love is it's all very practical to the setting. Okay, so, like, hedge magic, you're thinking, oh, it's just little things that allow me to, like, clean pots and pans with magic. No, but you run a tavern. That's super important, actually.
Yeah.
Like, having magic spells that can do chores for you is great.
Yeah.
And then there's what? There's like a bardic style of magic that involves glamours.
Yep.
I forgot what the third one is, but then there's a nature it's like rote magic. Like your traditional spellcraft of, like, wizardry.
Thaumaturgy, yes.
Yeah, thaumaturgy sort of stuff. And then the last one is nature magic, and what I really loved about that one is your spell list changes depending on what seasons it is.
Yes.
And then there are some abilities in there where you can do rituals to artificially create a season for a short period of time, mm-hmm. and with it, your spell list changes.
Yeah.
So if you need your springtime spells really badly, and it's the middle of winter, you can do a ritual to fool nature into thinking it's spring for, like, a scene.
Yeah. And it's interesting because they talk about, like, using spells that are on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you might have brambles that you can do in spring and summer,
mm-hmm.
but going into fall, they don't affect the same way, and they're totally not existent in winter.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't do that spell kind of casting.
Yep.
And I love that. I would love to see that system be for sorcery in other systems.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it makes sense for the space.
Yeah.
You know, I go to the elemental plane of fire. I guess as a sorcerer, that's all I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. That's what I have access to.
Right.
That's what's around me. That's the flow that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense. And then they have things like Gadgeteer and, you know, being able to make scrolls, mm-hmm. or items, or even enchant is included in there of, like, how, and it's, again, simplistic mechanics, but the idea is that they want to simplify everything down to, you're not going to be casting 5 spells a day.
Right.
You're going to do 1. Maybe 2 if you work really hard at it.
Yeah.
And you've prepared.
Probably going to be an emergency when you do cast those spells.
Right.
Yeah.
You spend the traits to become one of those things, you know how hard it is to keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a pixie and you're inherently magic and one of your traits is considered magical,
mm-hmm.
sure, everything that you do with that is magic, but that just means it's the effect of magic. It's got that statement with it.
Right, you're just doing pixie stuff at that point. That's not like, you know, you're more powerful or anything.
Right, unlike other things where it's like only magic will affect this. No, that's not part of this game. We're not framing that to that level. We're just saying like, oh, you're doing it with a magical effect. That's fantastic.
Uh-huh. How good. Nice. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Roll 2d6.
Yeah. This guy doesn't like magic, or something like that. You know?
Sure.
You know, or doesn't trust magic.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's that I like that the game knows that it's going to be talking to crunchy people.
Uh-huh.
And people who are coming into the system with the expectation in their mind that has been set out there that D&D is the standard. If I've never played a game, role-playing game before, there's this level that I'm going to sit down at a table and I'm going to have to do D&D-like things.
Yeah.
Even if it's not D&D. But because it's a level of narrative and it's still got dice mechanics, it does, like, if I came to that game, like, my friend says, hey, we're going to be playing Tiny Tavern. It's a slice of life game, a role-playing game. Okay, I like slice of life. That sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I come with my dice bag that I bought at my local gaming store, and I set it down, and like, oh, it's powered by the apocalypse. You don't need those. Like, it's all just word-based. I'm now lost.
Right.
I shouldn't have brought dice. Like, I thought dice was a thing.
Right.
This game is like, no. You just pull 3d6 out of there.
What class should I play? What class? What? Well,
but again, This game gives you that. Like, mm-hmm. we're not talking about classes, but what do you want your position to be at the tavern?
Yeah.
Oh, I could think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's because it's focused on the tavern or whatever it is you choose,
mm-hmm.
it brings that choice down, right? Yeah. We're no longer saying, hey, you can be whatever you want to be, and then I'm going to throw you in this giant world and direct you, you know, put you guys in a general direction, and then you can do whatever you want.
Right, and you may or may not be useful.
It's daunting for any player at the table to think of, like, okay, well, then what do I want to be in this unbelievably large world? No. It's a tavern. Do you want to be a guest who lives there or somebody who works there? Oh, yeah, I'll work there. Okay. What do you want to do?
Cool. What's your job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's pretty straightforward. Are we leaving the tavern? Probably not.
Can I be a busty barmaid? You may absolutely be a busty barmaid.
100%.
Yes.
100%. And again, the thing that this game doesn't do is at no point does it lean into any of the other tropes that are out there. In fact, mm-hmm. it kind of actively makes itself into a very lighthearted, cartoony kind of thing.
Yeah.
It almost feels like a web comic.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, which is kind of like it. You weren't wrong when you said you could play a dark and seedy version of this
100%,
game.
Yeah.
But I had to like wrap my brain around like, wait a minute, is that right? Can you do it? Because it does present itself, like you said, very much like Saturday morning cartoon style, you know?
Yeah. With all the lightness of it.
Yeah, sure.
With that graceful touch.
Mm-hmm.
Without being cutesy, mm-hmm. or playful. It's direct in its statements. So I like that about it. It's not trying to lean you in one way or another. It's just being very obvious.
Can we open every single one of your games with someone going, Tiny Taverns is filmed in front of a live studio audience?
100%. 100%. Laugh track could be included. All right. That being said, what didn't you like about it?
All right. So here's my one gripe with Tiny Taverns.
Sure.
Is that... It uses its very simple mechanics mm-hmm. for nearly everything.
Yes.
Okay. And I think it spends a lot of pages. And we've talked about this earlier, that it's necessary to spell some things out for people who are transitioning from other game systems that do have these mechanics, that are expecting more complex rules, that are expecting bespoke rules for things like grappling and fighting and mm-hmm, stealthing mm-hmm. and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand why it spells out all of those things individually and basically says, look, we're using the same rules for all of this stuff. It never changes, but here it is in black and white that you stealth the same way, that you barter, that you fight, that you, you know, mm-hmm. mix potions, right?
Yep.
But I, for one, reading through it myself, I found it a little distracting that it devoted so much ink to spelling all that out to essentially just say, use the core mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
20 pages could have been saved right there.
Yeah.
But then at the end of that section, it has a little, almost like a sidebar, and it goes, okay, we know this is a lot. Now we're going to take you into the advanced rules. And it's almost as if the game system itself acknowledges mm-hmm. that it has just laid a ton of stuff on you. And then it is going to add more mechanics. And this is kind of... It's a broader problem with rules light systems that I have.
Mm-hmm.
That I think Tiny Taverns is just one of these, mm-hmm. right? I think the primary culprit of this has been Powered by the Apocalypse games.
Okay.
For me. In that, yeah, your core rule is very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Roll your 2d6 with advantage or with a disadvantage or whatever, fives and sixes means that you succeed. Cool.
Sure.
I get that, okay? The problem is, then, is that you are going to start adding in all these alternate rules that are not necessarily using those mechanics,
mm-hmm.
okay? So, like, we didn't talk a lot about the relationship mechanics,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but we mentioned that they were there. And what mm-hmm. those are, basically, is you've got these relationship ratings of, like, liked, loved, nemesis, rival, and something else, and I don't remember what it is, but regardless of what that fifth state is, each one of those means
secret.
Secret.
Yeah,
yes, if you
I
have
was trying to remember
some
it,
sort
yeah.
of some sort of a secret between shared between the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of those means something distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those has a rule attached to it. And this is primarily with NPCs. You don't really have these things with the other PCs. But essentially those rules dictate how you can essentially use that NPC as a resource,
mm-hmm.
To call them in, to include them in a scene, or, to spar against them as your rival or whatever. And if it were just the relationship mechanics, that would be one thing. But then there is little idiosyncrasies with the magic, and there's little idiosyncrasies with the injuries and
moods
the,
and
moods and yeah, moods on top of that. Like, moods are a thing, and there's like 7 or 8 different moods that all mean something different. And once you start piling in these extra rules,
mm-hmm.
you start needing to constantly reference the book, because they are exceptions to the 2d6, look for fives and sixes rule.
Yes.
And the reason I kind of compare it to Powered by the Apocalypse is because you do that with every single move is its own individual rule.
Yeah.
I mean, the core of Powered by the Apocalypse is very simple. 2d6, plus or minus your thing. 7 to 9 is a partial success. 10 plus is a great success. Mm-hmm. 6 or under is a failure. Cool. That's Power by the Apocalypse. But what moves do you have? When do they apply? What do they do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, every individual thing is a thing you're going to need to reference, either by a book or by having a cheat sheet next to you or something like that. And I feel like Tiny Taverns, unfortunately, verges. It's not too bad.
No, I don't think it is too bad.
But it does start. Like, by the time I got halfway through the special rules, I'm like, I'm already kind of lost.
No, it's why it took me so long. And
yeah.
I'm with you on that, is that it took me to stopping myself from reading paragraph to paragraph.
Yeah.
I had to stop doing that because I was not getting, I was getting bogged down
mm-hmm.
in trying to remember things, when instead I think the book was being very explicit of, like, anything that's in one of these boxes is basically a chart that you need to have
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for when the situation comes up. That's it. If they could put that in, like, a single page, double, you know, 8.5 by 11 double-sided piece of card, it would solve the problem.
Yeah.
Because, and this is where I agree with you on all that, but when you, because the base mechanics are what they are,
mm-hmm.
and the size and thickness of this book is what it is.
Yeah, sure. It's about a centimeter thick, and it's a, what, 7 by 5
yeah.
sort of format?
Yeah, total.
Smaller book.
Yeah, with index and, like, actual, like, storybook section in it, it's 231 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not much.
Yeah, and then the text is a reasonable size.
Oh, this is some so easy to read for me.
Illustrations and stuff of that in there, yeah. Yeah.
But what I looked at that, I said, it feels like the rule book for Battletech.
Mm-hmm.
Tabletop Battletech, in that it's overwhelming when you look at all the minutia, and then you pull out the one cardstock that they give you, and you're like, this is what you need to play the game.
Right, right. Here are all of the rules. Are you firing missiles? Look at this chart. Are you moving? Look at this chart.
Yeah.
And you only need to look at them
yeah.
when you're doing that specific
Here
thing.
Is the flow of gameplay.
Right.
It is literally 5 lines.
Do you not have any missiles on your mech? Cool. You can ignore the entire upper
right-hand
corner of this chart.
Heat,
yeah.
Here you go.
Yep.
Criticals, here you go.
Yep.
That is what this game needs. It's just a single piece
a
of cardstock.
A single cheat sheet. Well
and
laid
it would,
out.
And it would literally, like, dismantle this entire book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great. It just, it doesn't have it because, again, the book is a traditional TTRPG book.
Yeah.
In that sense. I will say that I agree with you on all the things that you disliked. It was in the same frame, but I was able to easily see past it. Whereas other systems, like Shadowrun, killed me the first time I looked at it.
Oh yeah,
it was just too much
easily.
And that is a game system where you have to have the book to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no amount of cheat sheets. In fact, you might want to have an app. to
right,
assist you
right.
on some of the shit that's going on in Shadowrun.
Cross-referenced, hyperlinked, you know,
yeah,
rules.
Seriously,
yeah.
Like, when you need an app to make a character.
Yeah.
Because there's so much shit, and gear is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a major part of that. That's when games are super ridiculously crunchy.
Yeah.
But this game basically shows you the crunch and then reminds you of all those other games that have abused you
yeah.
in the past and said, remember this rule? It's 2d6.
Mm-hmm.
You remember this roll? It's 2d6.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, hey, here's the fun things we're doing with our game that's a little different that was unexpected.
I also kind of had to remind myself, too, that, like, this was my first time reading through those rules.
Yeah.
And all rules feel overwhelming when you're reading through a 200-page book where they're like, here's how you do this, and this is and this is this, and that is that, and then there was a seagull.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if I'd had a little more time to sit with it, if I'd had a little more time to read through it a second time or a third time,
yeah.
And I think probably by the second or third game session, I'm going to have it, like, memorized,
mm-hmm.
you know. I feel like there aren't that many rules that I wouldn't pick it up super quickly, but it just feels a little overwhelming in the first read.
I also don't think that this is one of those games where you need a heavy session zero, like Milk Run.
No, you don't. No,
it's,
you don't.
There's your milk run is your opening session.
Yeah.
Because You've just done all the mechanics in the first test that everyone does.
Right, and they suggest making all your characters together, and then, of course, your sort of typical narrative game step of, like, creating bonds between your characters. Yep. Who likes who? Do you have a rival here? Mm-hmm. What don't you like about them?
Yeah. To blend everything together.
Right.
And make it feel very comfortable so that the DM can sit back, let the story kind of emerge, and then pluck and pull, but set a situation in motion.
Right.
You know,
toss a pebble into a pond and watch which way the ripples go.
Yeah. We start the story at closing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 6 p.m. You guys are starting wind down because it's a weeknight. All the loggers have gone off home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're done with their drinks and everything like that. The few people who crashed for the night are heading up to their rooms because it's an early night for everyone. And then the door gets knocked in and three injured orcs come in and collapse, breaking two tables.
Well, we are a triage ward now. I'll get the towels.
Yeah. And that can be the opening of a story. And literally at that point, the storyteller can just sit back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're unconscious. Where does the story go?
Right.
What do you do with them?
Right.
Do you pile them up in the corner? Nope. Nobody notices?
Cordwood.
Yeah. You know, but that's the thing is about these stories is it is a slice of life. It's more about those people around and what they're talking about while taking care of, you know, the Weekend at Bernie's orcs who are there in the room, you know. And I love that. I see a lot of potential, but I also see a lot of this doing the one thing that I need it to do for me, which is stop staring at the world, stop making relationships challenging and connections challenging, and let the game write itself as the story goes on. So that's kind of where I sit with this one and why I'm very interested in running it is because it's some things that I need to dial back in my game design.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested.
I'm excited to play this game with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Next week.
Next week.
I will be sitting back and filling your tea.
Rob, I went online.
I
found myself a nice soapbox.
Oh, you did?
For next week.
Is it sturdy?
It's good and sturdy.
You're going to be standing on it for a while.
Exactly. It's good. It's good and sturdy. It's been nicely sanded down and painted, so I'm not going to get any splinters or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
For my little soapbox. Next week's topic is D and PTSD.
Yes.
Y'all have heard me talk a little bit or a lot about my particular issues with Dungeons & Dragons, and so I am going to take next week to get off of my chest a lot of my personal quibbles with Dungeons & Dragons, not only as a system, but as a part of our gaming culture,
mm-hmm.
and what influences it has brought to our tables and to our gaming groups and such like that.
Yeah.
Especially in its most recent iteration, where it sits now. With this current generation of gamers.
Where we've even stepped, because we're now a few years into live play understanding.
Yeah.
Like, where are we right now when... And I laughed today about it when I saw Ginny D giving how to be a great DM advice.
Oh, I actually watched that video. It was really good.
If she's listening or one of her great followers are listening, I'm not discounting it.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting that she's at that point that she feels comfortable. And she immediately said, I am not the best DM because she's only a few years in.
What I was really proud of her for saying actually in mm-hmm. that video is she said, I'm a huge fan of Critical Role, and I got into this hobby by watching Matt Mercer, whose strength as a storyteller is world building and creating these elaborate worlds and elaborate cultural systems and political systems and mm-hmm. religious systems, and intricate geography mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I thought when I first became a dungeon master that that's what I needed to do, and I sucked at it, and I was miserable.
Yeah.
And once I realized that that's not my strength, and that's not how I should be having fun, that I should be running smaller games with more slice of life to them,
mm-hmm.
which is where I excel.
Yeah.
I started having a lot more fun with the game. And so my advice basically is don't try to emulate another storyteller. Find your own strength and lean into that. And I thought that was a great piece of advice. And I was really proud of her for saying it.
But we're here.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I think that's something to be said from where we've come from and what's still left in our cultural background, that PTSD that we have from history and how that affects us, I think is going to be serious. Because I've got my touchstones that are that sit on the edges of D&D and what it's done to us and what it's done to the culture as a whole and how we've had to recover from it. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I'm going to air my dirty laundry for my bad breakup with the game system, and y'all get to listen to it.
Yep.
So we love you guys much, and in the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at @ST_Conclave, on Instagram at @ST_Conclave. Listen to us live every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time on mixlr.com/storyteller-conclave. And join us up on our Discord. We'd love to hear from you there. Toss us some questions. Tell us about the game system you're running. Talk to the other great storytellers that are up there. You can find that link on our Twitter as well as our website, storytellerconclave.com.
We'd like to thank our Patreon members who support us every single month, especially our name members, Knox in the Box, Subjet, the Arcane Asylum Veteran, Huluhu, Sam, Sean, and Sparkle Motion. We truly appreciate all your support. Our pre-show music is by Arcane Anthems. You can find them at patreon.com/arcaneanthems. Our intro music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. You can find them at geefrog.bandcamp.com or on YouTube Music. And our outro music, which you're hearing right now, is Only Our Footprints in the Sand by Midair Machine. You can find them at freemusicarchive.org.
And a big shout out, as always, to our families, Vicky and Sean. Thank you so much for loving and supporting us. All of our families who've sat with our friends, all of our friends who've sat with their tables over these years, who gave these great stories to share with you. And you, every single one of our listeners, we love you guys
love
so
you guys.
Much.
Good night.